One of America's most beloved horticultural icons, Dr. Alan Armitage, Professor Emeritus of the University of Georgia, joins us to talk about his new book of Naked Ladies and Forget-Me-Nots. With that title, you know we have questions. Seriously, we are excited to talk to this expert plantsman on companions to plant with our beloved roses. So put your thinking cap on, students. It's time for class.
It's time for the Rose Chat Podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating the world's most beloved flower, the rose. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleef and Teresa Byington as they chat with rose lovers and experts from around the globe. With each episode, you'll gain valuable knowledge and insights to achieve the rose garden you've always dreamed of. Listen now as we explore the world of roses.
Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Easy to brew and use on all indoor and outdoor plants. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Hey y'all, it's Chris Van Cleef. I'm the creator of the Rose Chat Podcast. For me, growing roses has become a passion. My membership in the American Rose Society has helped me to create the rose garden of my dreams, right in my own backyard. I also enjoy the camaraderie and support of a network of rose growers who are eager to share, learn, and grow together. To learn more about membership in the American Rose Society, visit their website, rose.org.
Dr. Alan Armitage is on the line. He's the author of a new book of Naked Ladies and Forget-Me-Nots, the stories behind the common names of some of our favorite plants. Dr. A, why'd you write this book? How did it come about?
Sort of a labor of love, because it's one of those things, you know, I've written a number of books, and I've written about plants and, you know, all these taxonomic things and this, that, and the other thing, and they've all done quite nicely. Then I found that I enjoyed, and people enjoyed listening to me telling stories, so you know, one of the first stories in this book was a story that I had done in a book called Legends in the Garden, and it was a story of how Annabelle got its name. And Annabelle hydrangea, of course, is a famous hydrangea. It was interesting to see how a plant got its name, and the fact that this plant was named after a couple of ladies who went horseback riding near the town of Anna, Illinois. And it took 53 years before this plant that they found was discovered by industry, and they needed a name. So the fellow who actually saw the plant in the town of Anna knocked on a door, which turned out to be one of the lady's granddaughters, and he named it for the bells of Anna, and it became known as Annabelle. And, you know, but a story like that, it's just neat. It's just cool. It's just, you know, that any of us could have found a plant like that and had it named after the bells of Anna. So those kind of things I've done a bunch of, and I just wanted to get into more of these names. So that's how this book sort of came to be.
Well, you know what I love most about this book? I'm a common name gardener. I don't know any of the horticultural names of plants. You know, I just know it by Black-Eyed Susan, Annabelle hydrangea. And so this book, this really spoke to me, the first story I read in there, which was about Annabelle.
Yeah. And if you read, poor Teresa, we're talking about this book and you don't have one, I'll be sure to send you one. But if you read the very first page or the second thoughts of the author, and the second paragraph was when I was speaking in New York, and all these crazy people said that common names were silly and people would learn all the botanical names and there's too many common names for a single plant. And I just simply said they were stupid. They were crazy. That's not the way life is going to be. And it's, you know, we have to have common names. Don't you love a common name of, you know, Love Lies Over the Garden Gate, or you know, common names like hooker's lips. I mean, really, they're a whole lot more fun than the botanical name, that's for sure.
Well, I have a whole line of Annabelle hydrangeas, and I'll never look at them the same again. So that's what these stories do for us. They make our plants come alive.
They do. And the book on legends, I think, is one of the ones, like, who's Nellie Stevens and who's Francis Williams? These are real people. And these stories and this history gets lost if we don't write it down. And so that was the premise of the first book. And then everybody wanted to know more. And because I do a lot of speaking on stories. And they just said, where can I find? Why is it dogwood called a dogwood, for goodness sake? It has nothing to do with dogs. So, you know, I decided I'd just figure out if I could find some. And many of them were steeped in fantasy and obviously in mystique and in herbal medicine, and many of them nobody knows where these names came from, I guarantee you. So, but anyway, it was a great research project, to say the least.
I love the story about the hollyhock.
Isn't that cool?
Ooh, tell it. I want to hear.
I mean, really, it hasn't. Well, and I probably didn't write very well about that. It has nothing to do with any hollies, and what the heck is a hawk?
And, yeah, I think about ham hocks. You know, I'm from the deep south. So.
Well, but anyway, I mean that's interesting that you enjoy that story, because I found that when I went into this thing, it was hard to find out. But it has to do, of course, with the Crusaders coming back from the Holy Wars, and this plant they brought back with them, and because it came from the Holy Land, they called it Holy Mallow, and it came out of a Welsh name, and the Holy Mallow, the other name was, and I can't even pronounce it, but Hocus Benedita. So they got the Hocus and the Holy. And it became known as a holy hocus, which became holy hawk. And I mean, again, some of these stories are just, you know, they're not as exciting as others. But, you know, the story I love best, and guys, I don't know how long you said I got 10 minutes. We're done. But there's a lot of stories about where plants get their names. And that's the whole thing. You know, a dogwood, or why are pinks called pinks, or where the bachelor's buttons come from. They're all really kind of fun, but interspersed within the stories of the plant names are stories about plants. So there's probably a good dozen or 15 stories about plants. Annabelle being one of them. Okay. That was a plant that has a really unique story, but the one that I really loved and nobody believes. Okay, Teresa, you get to answer this question. Did your mother or your grandmother tell you that carrots were good for you?
Well,
maybe they did.
No, carrots. I don't think they did.
Well, many people, and if you go on the internet, many people, in fact, my mother did, and I know many, many, many people did, carrots are supposed to be good for your eyes.
Oh, yes, okay. We did hear
that. Okay, you probably heard that. The carrots are good for your eyes. And they got vitamin A, they got good things, and they're certainly good for you. But, and if you go on the internet right this minute and you say carrots and eyes, you'll see all sorts of stuff about how fabulous carrots are for the eyes, and particularly for eyesight at night. Okay? So this is something that has been told since the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, and all the way through. Well, it turns out that carrots have absolutely nothing to do with healthy eyes. Nothing. And what happened, I can believe this. So what happened is that during the Second World War, okay, when the Germans were coming across the Channel and they were blitzing London with great success, the English found something called radar. And a special kind of radar. And they were able to see the German planes coming even at night. Of course, is when they came over. And so they started having success and shooting down the planes before they got to London. And they had so much success, everybody obviously noticed. And they didn't want the Germans to know why. Because in the front pages of the paper were, you know, that we're having great success and we're not sure why. And so the British, now this is true, the British Admiralty came out with a story that said that we are so much better now because we have had our pilots eat carrots and it improves their night vision. And so what the British, what the English government did is they made a whole program on eat carrots. So they had programs on eating carrots are good for the eyes. Eating carrots are good for the blackout, night vision. They had a whole program for kids on Mr. Carrot. And they made a huge program so that people would believe that carrots were the reason why their pilots were so successful. Now, whether or not the Germans believed a single word, I don't know, but the people did. And in fact, if you look at the story in the book, I have posters and everything. And in fact, this story about carrots is why your mother and her mother told you to eat carrots for your eyes. Nothing whatsoever to do with fact. But and I was going through this, and I said, you know, and there's even a carrot museum. So it's really quite something. But this is that actually one of my favorite stories, I probably tell it better than it reads, but it reads kind of interesting when you see the posters. They're well done. So anyway, that's a cool story.
They were protecting king and country. They had to do it absolutely, well. They were protecting king and country.
But you know, I'm feeling absolutely a little betrayed by my mom at this point.
Well, your mom didn't know. Don't worry.
Yeah.
She did the best she knew based on the information she had at the time.
Absolutely. And get upset with the British. But we all get upset with the British, so that's good. But anyway, that is one of my favorites, to be sure. So there you go.
Yeah. Dr. Ray, I know a lot of our listeners are always looking for perennials that will really put on a show in their garden, and wanted to just pick your brain for a minute on some of your favorite tried and true perennials for the garden.
Well, you know, they're okay. I hope we have all night, but the fact is that I do have favorites, and I have favorites that I recommend to gardeners, particularly to, I speak to a lot of crazy gardeners, master gardeners and all that kind of stuff. But I also speak to a lot of people that just like gardening, but they don't want to get too serious about it. So they really want to have something that works, because we are a land now, we're a land of decorators. We're not a land of gardeners anymore. And I say that there's a ton of gardeners out there. Believe me, I speak to them every night, every day. But there's a whole, your neighbors, your friends, they're probably decorators. They want something that makes their house look nicer. They want something that they can sit around the barbecue deck and barbecue pit or whatever and see something pretty, which is just fine. So I'm often recommending plants that I think are terrific, but I know they're going to work. So, some of the plants that, you say I'm a perennial guy, but I can't get enough Japanese maples. Okay, so that's one of my absolutely favorite plants. I am also really, really interested in some of the newer things. I love my lilies. I think the Oriental lilies make just a fabulous, easy to grow plant. And they give success to almost anybody. I love, Chris, I'll tell you this, I love my roses. And I'm just learning about roses. I really am just learning about roses. And that's why Chris and I have this friendship now, because we're helping each other. He's helping me more than me him, I guarantee you. But but thank goodness that the roses have bounced back so well, because there was a time, I'm sure Chris will tell you, that people just gave up on roses because of black spot and mildew and other things. And we have great programs in Texas and the South and other places as well that are bringing roses that really work back to people, because people always will love roses. So those are some of mine. And on the app, we put some roses together that we think are really, really good. But, you know, I'm big into everything these days, like fall flowering plants, like anemones. I think there's some terrific anemones out there, and they're old fashioned, but they work. And nothing wrong with something that works, as far as I'm concerned. And of course, if you don't have deer, hosta work out very well. But if you are in deer country, that's a crapshoot, to be sure. But but that, you know, the thing with lilies, and I think too, what I, you know, there's deer and there's deer. And the deer will eat everything if they're hungry enough. We know that. But they're going to chew some things first. They just are. Hosta, for example, is on their list of delicious dishes. But, you know, other things like, you know, most of the mints and a lot of the salvias, a lot of verbenas, a lot of this and that. There's plants that they're not going to touch until they really are starving. And that's why people are so excited about hellebores. And hellebores have just gone through enormous breeding strides. So we no longer have to put up with hellebores that, or Lenten rose, that the flowers are always nodding down. You have to get on your hands and knees to see how pretty they are. We now have hellebores where the flowers are standing straight up. And this is really exciting stuff. And the deer don't touch them, again, assuming that there's no such thing as don't touch, but the deer don't bother them. They're shade tolerant. The foliage looks good all season, and they flower early for that spring when mm-hmm. Teresa's snow goes away. So, mm-hmm. You know, those are some epimedium. I can't get enough of barrenwort. There's another plant that is just underused, and a plant that tolerates dry shade really easily. It gives you fabulous flowers in the spring, and it looks great all season as a ground cover. So, I mean, and again, we could do this all night.
And it's called barrenwort. There must be a story there.
Oh, boy, you want to know a story. Ooh. Well, Chris, we're going to give the whole book away. I have to bring Teresa into the fold here, okay? I'm going to tell you just, well, there's two stories on barrenwort, but the one is part of what this wort is all about, W-O-R-T. You know, there's lungwort and kidneywort and barrenwort, St. John's wort, all these warts. And there's a big story in the book about where this term wort, it means useful for or looks like. The barrenwort was actually the first fertility drug for barren women. That's where its name came from. And so you're looking at really a very interesting plant. It has... same ingredient as the blue pill. So it worked. It was for barren women to help conceive. But they found this out. I don't know if you're ready for this. This comes from Japan. And they found this out. The Japanese goat farmers found out that when the barrenwort was in flower, it was called epimedium, but not barren, when it was in flower and in leaf, and when the goats ate it, they found there was a lot of male goats trying to get with the female goats. And it became known as, and I can't make this up now, it became, and you can buy it under this name. It's called horny goat weed. Now, if you don't believe me, you can go to your pharmacist and go to that herbal section, and you will find horny goat weed in there, and it is used still today by various people. But the wort means useful for, the barren was to help conceive, but it came from the Japanese herders who noticed that there were a lot of little goatlets coming about when the epimedium was around. So yeah, there's a lot of stories there, Teresa.
Aren't you glad you asked, Teresa?
Don't ask any more, Teresa. They get worse.
Well, we certainly cannot top that, I'm sure.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. But I think you'll enjoy this book. It's got a lot of stories like that, but also, as I say, the carrots and the poppies and the Annabelles and all that, they're all kind of fascinating.
Well, you told us about some perennials. What are your recommendations for annuals?
Oh, that's easy. Well, no, there's nothing easy. But if you are like many people, and again, we're way off topic when I say I can tell you all the trends that are going on in the world of gardening, but and roses, by the way, are one of the trends. But with annuals, the trend in gardening is for containers and mixed containers on the deck. The garden of tomorrow is the deck. And so color is really important. And if you have things like begonias are the biggie. Okay, if you want to sort of bet on the races, bet on begonias. And the reason is that we know wax begonias been around forever. Maybe Teresa, where you are, you're doing some tuberous begonias. But right now, where the breeding is taking us, because there's a huge problem with impatiens now. You hardly see any anymore because of the disease pressure on impatiens. Begonias are the shade tolerant plant of the of today and maybe the future, depending on when impatiens can get back on its feet. But there are huge breeding using the Rex begonia, you know, grandma's houseplant. But using the Rex begonias as a breeding source, along with the wax begonias and all, so we get great performance outdoors in the shade and extraordinary beauty at the same time. So that, and again, there's all sorts of begonias come into the market that have pendulous branches and flowers, and you know they take shade, that's one that's really coming along big time. But there's a ton of them to be sure, and I've tried to put a bunch of those Chris on the app also, as far as what are the great annuals, what are the great perennials. That helps a little bit.
Speaking of the app, I'll tell you, I can't seem to get enough. I can't seem to stay off this app. So let's go ahead and talk about Armitage's Greatest Perennials and Annuals app, which is available in the iTunes Store and in the Google Play Store as well. So what inspired you to do an app?
Well, I'll tell you, my goal in life is to share what I know, and I really enjoy it because, you know, when I saw the fifth book on gardening for dummies, each one 200 pages, I said to myself, what self-respecting dummy is going to buy a book of 200 pages, truly, about something they know nothing about? You know, we've got, and it comes back to that meeting that I told you about where these people are going on and on about botanical names being so much better than common names. If we are going to be as an industry, if we are going to continue, we have to make things easy, non-intimidating, and inexpensive. Because, you know, I won't even talk with the millennials. All of us, we have, you know, things to do and places to go, and we love gardening. But, you know, not many of us want to stake plants. Not many of us want to spend their time spraying for insects, so we have to make it easy, and that's always hard. So where do you get the information? Well, you can go to books, of course, which I hope they do. You can go to wherever, but let's just use the phone. And they're using the phone for everything. Why not use it for? Mm-hmm. Why not take what I call take us to them? And so if you get on this app, and I'm changing the name, by the way, Chris, it won't happen for a little bit, but because I've added so many more things other than annuals and perennials. There's shrubs, there's vegetables, there's herbs, you know, there's, of course, roses, there's climbers, there's fall flowering plants. So I don't know what the name's going to be, but it's a lot more than just annuals and perennials. And, of course, there's every plant has a deer rating as to which ones they like and don't like. So it's been very, very good. And the reason I did it is exactly that. How am I going to get something in the hands of my daughter who has no time, little money, but lots of interest, and that's how we're going to do it.
Yeah. Well, might I suggest that we rename it Alan and Chris's Awesome Gardening App?
I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay, Chris, you may be on there, and people are going to say, "Well, okay, now what?" But it is the Awesome Garden App may be in the title. I talked with some of my colleagues about what we should call it, and we're working on it. But anyway, it is really good. I mean, I say it good, and again, I'm the author, so I may be a little biased, but I think it's the coolest
thing
ever. And when I demonstrated it at a lecture, Okay, I got one more story here. So I go to a lecture, and let's just say there's 200 people there, okay? And I demonstrate the app on a screen, which I can do, and they all love this thing, okay? And so of the 200 people, 180 want this app, okay? Bang, bang, bang. So that's the thing. That would be simple. Of the 180, 20 still have a flip phone, okay? So that's done, 160. Of the 160, at least half, if not three quarters, cannot remember their password. So from 180 people who are dying for this app, it gets down to about 10. So, yeah.
The challenges we face.
The challenges, you know, I can't remember my password. And of course, most of these people are I don't know whose age you guys are, but anyway, so I said, just take it to your kids. You know, they'll know how to do it, and then they eventually do it. But anyway, it has been very successful, and I'm always, the nice thing about, you know, you pay $4.99 for it, which, you know, young people can't believe you have to pay for an app. But I haven't quite figured that business model out yet. But so, you know, it's always updated, though, and once you pay that atrocious fee of $4.99, you know, it's yours forever, no matter you know what I do, and I'm always updating it every month or so, or every week sometimes. So anyway, that's cool.
Well, you know what I tell my friends? I tell them to skip their designer coffee for one day and download this app.
There you go. I mean, they could download 10 apps with that designer coffee price. Oh no. Well, anyway, we are. I just love the fact that even though, you know, I see fewer gardeners, meaning that, you know, really love digging in the dirt, and for lots of reasons, it's not a critique, I just see fewer of them. There's lots and lots and lots of people who still like this stuff. And give them one plant and they want to. Give them one story and they want to tell somebody else. And I think that's what we do. That's what we all try to do. And I'll keep trying, I guess.
Well, Dr. A, thanks so much for taking just a few minutes out of your night to come on the show and talk to us about this new book, about some great annuals and perennials, and this awesome app.
Well, thank you, both of you, and I hope that they'll get your audience can enjoy and go to the website and get any book they want or get the app, as you said, and we'll just have a grand old time.
As a special offer to Rose Chat listeners, when you purchase Dr. A's book on his website, use the promo code ROSECHAT and enjoy a 15% discount. We provided a link on today's show page to purchase the book. Well, friends, that's all the time we have for this edition of the Rose Chat podcast, and we thank you for joining us. Until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
You've been listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington, expert rose gardeners who want to help you achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Don't miss an episode. Listen anytime on our website at rosechatpodcast.com or listen on the go via the Rose Chat app on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Share this podcast with your social networks and join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using the hashtag RoseChat. Join us next time for another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. The Rose Chat Podcast is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.